This week feels like the platforms are getting opinionated. Not here's a new feature, more like here's the new default way you're going to operate. And if you don't notice the default changed, you'll feel it later. Usually as surprise work, surprise risk, or surprise downtime. What's up, everybody? I'm Brian, and this is Ship It Weekly, a short weekly show where I filter the noise and focus on what actually changes how we run infra. Quick update before we jump in, Ship It Weekly is officially a video podcast now. Every episode going forward is available on YouTube in full video format. If you're audio only, nothing changes. Same feed, same cadence, and same show. Also, OnCallBrief.com is live. That's my system for tracking DevOps and infra news without drowning in tabs. Briefs start on Sunday to get refined throughout the week, and Thursday is the final pass. If you want to see what I'm tracking before the episode drops, that's the place. And Teller's Tech now has a Substack, too. If you want episodes and weekly briefs delivered to your inbox, that's the easiest option. And one last thing, I'm starting another round of interviews. If you want to come on and talk a migration, a postmortem, a weird outage, or how your team actually runs production, hit me up on shipitweekly.fm. All right, let's get into it. Five stories for today. GitHub is putting agentic workflows directly into actions. That changes what CI can do without a human driving. Gentoo is moving away from GitHub to Codeberg. It's a reminder that the Forge is not neutral infrastructure anymore. Argo CD upgrades are forcing server-side apply in certain paths. This is one of those small line in the notes, big day in prod things. AWS config expanded coverage again, which sounds boring until you realize governance scope can move under your feet. And AWS enabled nested visualization on virtual EC2 instances, a capability unlock that's going to change what people attempt to run. Then we'll do a lightning round and a human closer on the gap between AI everywhere and incidents still being painful. First main story, GitHub agentic workflows in actions. GitHub dropped agentic workflows into technical preview. The simple version is you write the intent in Markdown and an agent runs inside GitHub Actions to do repo work. It's not just run these steps, it's more like here's the goal, go handle it. Think issue triage, basic repo maintenance, investigating CI failures, and proposing fixes. This is not the same thing as Agent HQ. Agent HQ was agents in the GitHub experience. This is agents inside your automation engine. That's a very different place to add intelligence. So why does this matter? Actions is where a lot of secrets and permissions live. It's also where small automations quietly become core production workflows. When an agent can take actions, not just produce suggestions, you've created a new write path. And write paths have two roles. One, they need ownership. But two, they need constraints. Because the failure mode isn't always malicious. The failure mode is helpful, fast, and wrong. The scary version is an agent editing workflow files, because workflow files are basically the keys to the kingdom, or an agent doing cleanup that breaks a dependency you didn't even remember existed, or an agent repeatedly retrying something until it finds a path that works but violates policy. The first time an agent edits a workflow, it's a different game. So do this Monday. First, inventory what actions can actually do today. Don't start with features, start with permissions. Which repos allow workflows to write back to the repo? Which repos allow modifying workflow files? Which workflows can deploy, publish artifacts, or touch environments? Second, separate read-only automation from write automation. Agents can comment and propose, sure, but merges should require a human. That's the clean line that prevents a lot of pain. Third, lock down permissions in workflows. If you are still running broad default tokens, you need to fix that now. Treat write scopes like production credentials, because that's what they are. Fourth, add explicit approval gates for anything high leverage, secrets, deployments, runners, workflow file changes. If an agent can do it, a human should approve it, at least until you trust it and you've tested the blast radius. Fifth, logging. You need a record of what the agent changed and why, not just standard out from the workflow. Because the post-incident question won't be who clicked it, it'll be what sequence of actions did the agent take. Okay, that's story one. Story two is Gento moves off of GitHub to Codeberg. So Gento is moving repositories off of GitHub and towards Codeberg. They are pretty direct about why. They're uncomfortable with the direction GitHub is going around Copilot and AI pressure. This isn't a rage quit, it's an operational migration. Mirrors, workflow changes, community adjustments, all of the annoying real-world stuff. So why does this matter? Because GitHub isn't just a place where code lives. It's your auth story, your CI story, your review flow, your issue tracker, your release automation, your dependency and security alerts. So when the platform changes incentives or defaults, it's not a cosmetic change. It alters how work gets done. And Gento is basically saying, we want leverage and we want options. Even if you don't care about the politics, the engineering lesson is real. If a platform becomes your default for everything, you don't notice lock-in until you have to change something fast. And then you realize half your workflow isn't portable. Not the code, the workflow. Mirrors aren't boring. Mirrors are exit ramps. So do this Monday. Pick one repo that matters, map the dependencies. What breaks if GitHub is down for a day? Not developers are annoyed, what breaks operationally? Builds, releases, packages, security workflows, required checks, even how do we coordinate changes? Now, ask a better question. What do we need to keep shipping if the forge is degraded? Do we have mirrors? Do we have backups of more than Git objects? Issues and PR metadata matter. Release artifacts matter. Actions, config, and required checks matter. If you've never tested restore, do a small exercise. Pretend the repo is gone. Restore it and run the minimum path to ship. You don't need a full migration plan. You need confidence that you are not trapped. Okay, that's story two. Story three is Argo CD upgrades and server-side apply requirements. This one is pure operator reality. Argo CD has an upgrade path where server-side apply is required in certain setups, especially when Argo is managing itself or when you are applying manifests directly. The reason is a Kubernetes annotation size limitation. The last applied blob can get too large and it breaks apply behavior in weird ways. So the fix becomes use SSA. Let the API server own field management. So why does this matter? This isn't just a flag you add to a command. It changes how ownership works. SSA tracks fields differently. And that means upgrades can overwrite things you didn't realize you were relying on. This is where hidden customizations come back to haunt you. The little prod-only patches, the tolerations someone added once, the probe tweak that never got upstreamed into your real config. Upgrades are where tribal knowledge gets erased, or worse, half erased. And Argo is a special kind of risky upgrade because it's your deploy system. If Argo is down, you don't just lose a tool. You lose the safe path to change. Then everyone starts doing manual kubectl and drift shows up immediately. GitOps is calm until the GitOps system is the incident. So do this Monday. First, look at how you deploy Argo today. Is Argo managing itself? If yes, verify SSA is enabled in the application sync options before upgrading. Don't wait to learn this during the upgrade. Second, diff your live Argo resources against what you think you apply, and then find the hand edits. Find the temporary patches, write them down, and formalize them. Third, build an upgrade lane for Argo, even if it's small, a rehearsal environment. Same method, same manifest, same shape. Practice upgrade and rollback, and validate can we sync a known app after upgrade. Fourth, rehearse Argo is down mode. How do you deploy without it? How do you stop it from fighting you if it's partially alive? How do you get back to a known good state? Because when Argo breaks, every minute feels expensive. And thinking clearly gets harder. Okay, That's story three. Story four is AWS Config adding 30 new resource types. So AWS Config just added support for 30 additional resource types. Here's the key detail. If you record all resource types, Config can start tracking new types automatically. So scope expands under you without you doing anything. This is a quiet change, but it affects inventory, governance, and sometimes cost. So why does this matter? Most teams don't treat Config like a living system. They treat it like a checkbox. Then one day they try to get serious about governance and compliance, and they realize Config is actually foundational data. So when coverage expands, that's good. But it also means more evaluation surface, more resources showing up in aggregators, more roles being evaluated, more non-compliant noise. And the worst failure mode is not Config has data. It's Config has data nobody owns. New resource types show up. Roles fire. Nobody knows who should fix it. So it becomes a platform team problem by default. And platform teams get buried in triage instead of improving systems. Inventory expansion is great until it becomes surprise accountability. So what I would do Monday, go check your Config recorder settings. Are you recording all resource types? If yes, decide if that's intentional, or if it's just we clicked it once years ago. Then check your roles. Which roles will start evaluating these new types? Tagging roles, encryption roles, public access rules, all the stuff. If new types will create noise, decide routing. Who owns the alerts? Who owns remediation? Also, baseline your Config usage and costs. Not because this change will wreck your bill, but because it changes the scope. And it's easier to explain early than late. Finally, tighten your ownership metadata. If you can't answer who owns this resource, governance becomes a scavenger hunt. That's story four. Story five is EC2 nested visualization on virtual instances. AWS now supports nested virtualization on certain virtual EC2 instances. Historically, nested virtualization on AWS was usually a bare metal story. Now it's possible on virtualized instances for some families. This is a capacity unlock. It's also a behavior unlock. Because the moment this exists, teams will attempt things they couldn't justify before. Full lab environments inside EC2. VM heavy testing. Security sandboxes. Let's run a hypervisor inside our runner fleet. So why does this matter? Nested virtualization sounds niche, but it's really about reproducibility and isolation. If you've ever wanted a test environment that looks closer to prod, this helps. And if you have tooling that expects a hypervisor, this helps. And if you were paying the bare metal tax purely for nested vert, this might be a cost lever, which is going to matter for some orgs. But it's also a foot gun if you combine it with credentials and loose network controls. Anything that starts looking like a workstation gets treated like a workstation. People install random tools. People store secrets in the wrong places. People run just this one thing. And that's why anything that looks like a workstation eventually gets treated like one. So do this Monday. If you have runner fleets, build fleets, or sandbox accounts, add this to your threat model. Ask what changes if nested VMs become available. Then set boundaries. Which accounts allow it? Which VPCs allow it? Do you want tighter egress controls? And then document an internal stance. Even a short note helps. Like, we support this for these use cases on these instance families with these guardrails. Because if you don't write the rules, you will end up inheriting random experiments. And then you'll learn about them during an incident or a bill review. Okay, that's story five. Okay, time for the lightning round, short and practical. GitHub updated their status page experience. There's now a 90-day historical view and better linking between incident days and availability trends. And honestly, given GitHub's hiccups lately, having a status page that's actually useful is a welcome addition. Open Build Service published a postmortem on a disruption that came down to database migration and locking behavior. It's a good reminder that migration plan is not the same as rollback plan. And a quick reminder, because we covered it already, GitHub Actions extended the self-hosted runner minimum version enforcement window. Treat that as runway, not permission to ignore it. If you have self-hosted runners, schedule the upgrade work. Another quick GitHub one, Actions had early February updates around things like runner controls and settings that reduce surprise drift across orgs. It's not headline news, but it's the kind of incremental improvement that saves platform teams time. AWS Config expanding coverage is also a reminder of a bigger pattern. A lot of Discover Everything services expand under you as AWS adds new stuff. That's not bad, it just means you need ownership, or the tool becomes noise. And if you are experimenting with agentic workflows, don't skip the boring part: permissions, approval gates, and audit trails. That's the difference between useful automation and mystery automation. Okay, that's the lightning round. Time for the human closer. There's a post called Lots of AI SRE, No AI Incident Management. And it nails something that feels obvious once you say it. Most AI tooling in ops is aimed at producing output faster. Write the YAML, draft the runbook, summarize the log, generate the postmortem doc. That's useful, but it's not the core pain during a real incident. Incidents aren't mostly writing. Incidents are uncertainty. What changed? What's real? What's correlated versus not? And incidents are coordination. Who's driving? Who's communicating externally? Who's making the rollback call? And how do we keep the team aligned when five things are happening at once? That is still wildly human. And honestly, that's what makes on-call exhausting. Now, tie this back to today's stories. We are putting more automation into the workflow. And in some cases, we are giving it more agency. Agents in Actions, deploy systems that can strand you mid-upgrade, governance tools that expand scope automatically. And all of this increases the number of things happening around incidents. So if those tools don't reduce uncertainty, they can increase chaos. The win is not faster output. The win is less uncertainty for tired humans. If AI can help, great. But the bar is, does it help you decide what to do next safely? Does it tell you what it's unsure about? Does it show you what it tried and ruled out? Can it give you an explanation you can trust at 3 a.m., not just a confident guess? So my take this week is simple. When you evaluate tooling, don't judge it by how clever it sounds. Judge it by whether it reduces uncertainty when you are on call. Because that's the moment that matters. That's where reliability is real. Okay, time for a recap. Today we talked about GitHub Agentic Workflows in Actions and how it's not just nicer CI, it's a new write path that needs guardrails. Gen 2 moving towards Codeberg, Forge choice is supply chain, governance, and leverage, not just convenience. Argo CD upgrades requiring SSA in certain paths. Control plane upgrades deserve their own lane and rehearsals. AWS Config adding 30 new resource types. Great coverage, but scope can't expand under you, so be intentional. EC2 nested virtualization on virtual instances. Capability unlock, and also a new what will teams attempt now moment. The lightning round was around some GitHub stories and Open Build Service publishing a postmortem. If you want the video version, full episodes are now on YouTube going forward. If you want the weekly briefs, oncallbrief.com is live. And if you want everything delivered by email, Teller's Tech Substack is up. And lastly, if you want to come on the show for an interview, reach out at shipitweekly.fm. More episodes, links, and show notes are on shipitweekly.fm. All right, I'm Brian, and I'll catch you next week.